Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 148, as we've just discovered it is, of Linux in the Ham Shack. I am your host, Russ, K5TUX, coming to you from Studio 3D in southwestern Missouri. And we also have with us Pete, VE2XPL, from Montreal, up in Canada.
Hey, good day. I'm only in 2D.
You're only in 2D? I think we're only in one dimension audio, so.
No, it's stereo. It's, you know, dual monaural.
Bimonaural audio or something like that.
Bimonaural.
I don't know. Is that a thing? Like that. I don't know. I don't think that's a thing.
It is now. We just made it up.
All right. We also have Cheryl, who's sitting across from me. Hello.
Hello, everyone.
All right. So let's get on with it. We have a episode to do, such as it is. It's been a while since we've actually done an episode, so hopefully this one is like a thing. And I've been lax about getting episodes done, but they are all done. They have all been posted. Everyone should be
enjoying
all of our episodes. And you have no idea how crazy busy it has been here and all of the things that have been going on, and we will not go into that right now, but it's just been nutty. We'll have to thank Cheryl for getting most of the content for tonight's show, and hopefully actually we come out with a full program, like from end to end at some point.
We will. And since Cheryl's joined us, you know, she does a lot of the work, but, you know, she does good work too, because a lot of the stuff is actually really interesting.
Ooh.
Not that it wasn't that interesting before, interesting.
That's that right. So we'll keep her working, and she can read this first story.
Right. Yay me.
Yeah, you. Aren't you glad you're here? Aren't you glad you filled in for us tonight?
Yeah. Filled in? Great. Okay, whatever. Okay,
yeah, Pete and I are leaving. Go ahead and finish the show and just let us know
just
when you're done.
Okay, great. Yeah. I see my
meet me at the corner bar there, Russ. We'll go for a beer.
Oh, yeah. Sounds good.
That's what I was gonna say. Do I just stop at the corner bar and pick you guys up or what?
As long as they have Guinness, I'm there.
Whatever.
Yeah, excellent.
All right, cool. So our next story is vanity call sign regulatory fees are being eliminated. This is good news for those of us in the United States who want to get vanity call signs. The FCC is eliminating the regulatory fee to apply for an amateur radio vanity call, which was $21.40. The change will not go into effect, however, until required congressional notice has been given, which will take at least 90 days. Aw, well... 90 days for Congress, that's pretty short, actually. As the Commission explains in a Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, Report and Order, MD Docket 14-92, it's a matter of simple economics. The FCC says it spends more resources on processing the regulatory fees and issuing refunds than the amount of the regulatory fee payment. And then there's a little addendum here from Pete. It says, in Canada, you cannot get a vanity call sign. Boo, Canada. You can apply for a call sign that is available, choosing from a list. Sometimes the letters suit your fancy, i.e. XPL. But doesn't XPL mean X Pete Landry? So you're not Pete Landry anymore? Is that?
Well, no, it's because you can't get two letters, you know, unless you're an advanced license, which I'm not. So I just kind of like the X sounds cool when you're saying X-ray, Papa Lima, saying X-ray and a call sign. For me, I just always thought that was the coolest thing. So I could have been like, you know, Papa Lima or Alpha Papa Lima,
you
but I specifically chose X for no reason except that it sounds cool.
You should have chosen Echo Papa Lima, because then it's just a dot, you know, for Morse code.
I could have.
Yep.
If I would have known Morse code then, maybe I would have.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, that's cool. Good for folks who are wanting to get their vanity call signs here in the U.S. It'll be a little cheaper for them. Very, very good news. Yeah, and
Petro in the chat room says that that's why he chose his call sign. He's X-ray Mike X-ray, so I guess he likes the X too. So there you go. We're together.
There is something about a call sign that has an X in it. It is kind of cool. So
He says he was thinking of X-Men, Professor X, X-rated, which, you know, why not?
I have a call
I
sign.
I should have been triple X.
Yeah, there you go. X-ray, although those X-ray are probably hard to come by. I bet XXX goes pretty quick. I also have a call sign with an X, which is excellent. It is excellent.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah. All right, Pete, read our next story. Go for it.
HAMAPS. MacLogger DXHD VR 1.2.1 for iPad, for all you fans out there, has just been released. That's good news. Dog Park Software has announced that version 1.21 of MacLogger DXHD for the iPad has been released. MacLogger DXHD is an amateur radio application that monitors the spots from your local DX cluster for DXing, contesting, or just casual rag chewing. It'll alert you to rare contacts or ban openings by looking up and displaying real-time propagation paths on a zoomable map. And it can log your contacts as a super-fast SQL database. MacLogger DXHD is available from the iTunes Store. More about it on the web, you can find information at dogparksoftware.com. It doesn't say if it's freeware or payware.
I'm looking up to see how much it costs right now, because I'm guessing it's probably not free. Not much in the App Store actually is.
Especially on iTunes.
Right.
Right. Let's see.
MacLogger DX. Hey, I can just download it. No, there's no fee.
There's no fee. It's free.
I'm on the dogparksoftware.com website, though. I'm not on iTunes.
All right. An actual free app for MacLogger.
You can just go right to Dog Park Software. Screw iTunes. I'm not a big fan of iTunes. I have nothing against it specifically. I just find it really heavy.
Let me see. MacLogger DX. I wonder if it'll actually run on my Mac here, my non-iPad Mac.
Let's see. Requires OS X, so it'll run on Mac, and Intel 64-bit processor.
Well, let me try it and see what happens. I'm going to download it, and if the show goes away, you know what happened.
And you can actually get version 5.62 beta.
That's the one I'm actually downloading right now. So I'm hoping my little Mac Mini here that I'm actually broadcasting the show on will not explode in the next couple of minutes.
Excellent. Real-time action, folks. Only that's here. Right.
Real-time downloads for your listening pleasure.
Cleewick just asked in the chat room if anyone has compared MacLogger with RumLog.
I don't even know what rum log is.
I don't know, but if it has anything to do with drinking, I'm down.
You're
with
there
it.
For yeah, it, yeah. Right.
It logs how many glasses of rum you take while you're having your DX.
Oh, yeah, that's probably not a good thing.
Okay, I downloaded the beta image file, but I cannot seem to open it on my Mac.
You haven't paid.
Oh, I haven't paid? Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure that's the reason.
Failed attempt joke.
Well, we have a online remaining bank. iPad, but...
Hey, it has a Logbook of the World support, too. Wow.
Hey, very nice.
I think it's cool.
I'm looking at the screenshots of this, and they actually look like they... Okay, here we go. The beta one didn't open, but the regular one did. So let me see what happens here. If the show goes away, we'll be back.
Okay, here we go. We've got it. We've got it. I found it. You have 15 minutes, Russ.
I have 15 minutes.
Yep,
you have 15 minutes. There's a little note at the bottom of the page. MacLogger DX must be registered to work beyond the 15-minute time limit. You can run the 15-minute demo as many times as you like. So we encourage you to download the free demo. Make sure that it meets your requirements before you register, since we cannot issue refunds. Boo. Single-user license, $95 US.
$95? Wow. Holy crap. Why did we do this story?
Sorry, I just found it and thought it was cool.
That's okay. Well, some people actually may be interested.
Well, I'm looking at RumSoft or the RumLogger now thing. It actually looks good, and I don't see not finding anything about cost yet.
Oh, cool. RumLog is from.
Oh, no. $5.
RumLog, $5 is better than $95.
Yeah, Cleewick says RumLog seems to be pretty compressive logger.
Same price.
Comprehensive, excuse me, logger on the Mac. An iPad I encountered today. Supported with contributions, though the iPad version is $5.
Well, it's actually a pretty cool looking logger, but I wouldn't spend $95 on it. That's for damn sure.
Well, no, you should go to the RumLog thing.
$95 on anything.
Yeah.
The Rum Lager looks pretty cool, too.
Rum Lager?
I've bought carts for less than
$95. It's DL2RUM.DE.
DL2RUM. Thomas Linda. In der Ritzbach.
Yeah, you can use the same log file on your Mac. Exchange the logs via iTunes, file sharing, or Dropbox.
Yeah, let's talk about that one. Here, I'm going to download that one right now since...
All right. This is exciting.
Rumlog Next Generation 1.1 or Rumlog? Let's just go with the regular Rumlog since that's what we're talking about.
Basic data exchange cool. with ICOM, Kenwood, Yaesu, and Elecraft. Transceivers using the Pigtail hardware, iPad only.
Is that the Pigtail that we've talked about before on the show?
Maybe. By Pignology?
Yeah, Pignology, yeah.
Yep, that's the one.
That's the one.
I'm looking at photos from the website, and some guy's working on some kind of wiring, and he's got a parrot next to him.
And apparently they have Rumlog for Windows as well.
All right, well, I'm waiting for Rumlog to open on my iMac, or not my iMac, my Mac Mini. Oh, there it is. Look at that. Hey, that's pretty cool looking. Wow, lots of options. This thing's got crazy options. We could spend two episodes talking about this thing.
I'm looking at the screenshots, and it looks actually pretty...
Under the Window tab, which shows like the various windows you can have open in Rumlog, the list actually scrolls off my screen. Net Control, DXCC Map, CQ, ITU Zones, WPX, US Countries, German DOK List, Russian Districts, IOTA... DX clusters, packet DX cluster, band maps, sun calculations, sun distance tables, gray line mapping. Man, this thing's nuts. All kinds of stuff in it. How much is this thing? $5?
$5.
Wow.
There's also RumPed, which is a DXpedition and contest logging tool for shortwave for the Mac. It supports DXpedition mode, major contests, and general contest mode. For unsupported contests, you can create your own contest rules.
Wow. This thing seems worth it if you're using a Mac for logging. It's got an amazing amount of features. And it also supports EQSL, Logbook of the World, ADIF, Cabrillo, and it can import RumPed. So if you're using RumPed, you can actually import it in that format into here as well, which only makes sense since it's written by the same dude. This was Delta Lima 2 Romeo Uniform Mic, DL2RUM.
It's also got Logbook of the World support, HamQTH, and QRZ.com integration.
It actually can track satellites, too.
And it'll make your breakfast.
Woo-hoo. Yeah, I bet it will.
It does everything. That's awesome.
It does.
Wow.
There's everything in there. All right. Anyway,
I just want to go out and buy a Mac just so I could try it.
There's another question.
Get a Hackintosh. Do the Hackintosh thing.
There's another question in the chat room about the difference between Debian and Linux Mint.
Distro question, what's the difference between Debian and Linux Mint, Debian? All right. We will get to that, Petro, later on in our segment that is not a segment yet. So.
But he just gave you, you know.
That's right. That's right. That's why I'm saying when we get there, we have content now. So. All right.
All right. So back with the show.
Yeah, back to the show.
Open source, segment two.
That's right. That was our whole first segment. Wow. Hey, or something.
Are we finished the story? That was fun. I enjoyed that.
Well, good. Hopefully our listeners do, too.
Yeah, a $95 app to a $5 app. You can save money and have fun.
Absolutely. All right, so we're going to move on to segment two, our open source segment, and we'll do the first one. It says, warning, don't download software from SourceForge if you can help it, which is bad news because I download lots of software from SourceForge.
I was shocked because this is like one of my most trusted sites, or was.
Right.
Yeah, I was shocked when I read this last night as well. So
a lot of the actual source distribution stuff of things you download, for ham radio and for any other use, really, lots of it comes from SourceForge. So this may be disappointing to folks out there. SourceForge is abusing the trust that we and our users had put into their service in the past, according to the GIMP project. Since 2013, SourceForge has been bundling junkware along with their installers, sometimes without a developer's permission. Don't download software from SourceForge if you can help it. Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I would just be wary of it. I wouldn't say just abandon SourceForge, because they are a great repository for software. Many open source projects now host their installers elsewhere, and the versions on SourceForge may include junkware. If you absolutely have to download something from SourceForge, be extra careful. So,
okay, again, so I'm gonna pose the newbie question. How do I be extra careful? How do I know that there's junkware?
Right.
I'm not sure you can know. I mean, because they're obviously not going to advertise it on SourceForge.
Look, download this package and it's loaded just, with junkware.
Yeah. The article says be extra careful. How do I be extra careful?
I'm not sure you can.
I'm only
going to
find out once it's downloaded. Maybe.
The thing is, my understanding of, in all of the things I've ever downloaded from SourceForge, when you download them, you're getting a direct link to the file itself that is posted there by the developer. I'm not sure how they're bundling junkware in with it. But that being said, this was obtained from a hopefully credible site, howtogeek.com, and of course the link to the story will be there. So maybe they include some information on how to be extra vigilant about whether your download is going to contain junkware or not.
Petro in the VA2MX XMX is saying install in a virtual machine first. Would that be a good way to do it?
I'm not sure, because you'd have to install an entire operating system just to download a piece of software. And if you had one running just so you could make sure that you weren't installing junkware, then maybe it is a good option, but it's probably not an option for everybody. This apparently came about because GIMP was being packaged with junkware, and that's why it came to light. But if I recall correctly, you can download GIMP from somewhere other than SourceForge.
I would think. I mean, it's such a widespread thing, GIMP. I can't see why you wouldn't be. Like, I mean, you can't just be able to get it on SourceForge. It's not the only place where you can get that.
No, it says when you
not
go to,
that I've tried, but
when you go to GIMP.org, it says you can download GIMP from GIMP.org.
If I can help it, I'll always get my software from the source rather than getting it from a repository.
Right.
That's my personal preference.
No, and it makes sense, because you're likely to get the most reasonable and least infiltrated copy from the true source of the software. Anyway, just be careful out there, and if you're downloading stuff from SourceForge, be as vigilant as you possibly can. Yeah, the question
Ted's
is
asking,
how do you know who
uploaded a project to SourceForge?
And I'm not sure you do know that, other than my understanding is that the owner of the project and those who are allowed to be contributors to that project are the only ones who can submit files for download to SourceForge.
Oh, so not everybody, like, I wouldn't be able to throw anything in there if I wanted to?
You could for your own project. You have to log in and define your own project, but you would not be able to submit something for someone else's project.
If you wrote some piece of software, do you give it to SourceForge to upload, or do you upload it?
You upload it to SourceForge.
Okay. So SourceForge doesn't have any control over it? I'm a little baffled by the story, so...
My understanding is
there's some guy who checks it out and makes sure it's okay and legit.
I don't think that they do. I think SourceForge is just a repository for source code. I'm not sure that they do any vetting.
Well, then who's bundling the junkware? Or is it just going to, in individual projects, maybe there's junkware, but it doesn't sound like the SourceForge people, quote unquote, would be doing this.
Well, it might be something along the lines of you upload your software to SourceForge to be downloaded, and then their methodology for downloading software allows them to impose something on top of your source code. You know what I mean?
Okay,
it's like,
yeah, okay.
They have a downloader or a download script or something, which adds the junkware to your download, even though you had nothing to do with it.
Looking at the article, I'm just kind of reading it diagonally, but it doesn't really say anything specific about the junkware. What does the junkware do besides being junk? Like, there's nothing specific, so I don't know. Anyways, it's always good to be cautious anyhow when you're installing something that you're not familiar with.
I'm looking at the chat room. It's actually kind of funny. VE3SRE popped in and said the issue is around Windows versions of various software, which gets bundled with non-GPL software. So you can accept the GPL license, but don't accept any other licenses, and you won't get any of the crapware. And then Petro jumped in and said, forget SourceForge, trust CNET and say yes to everything, which, by the way, is a very bad idea, folks. Don't do that.
Well, CNET is one of those ones, if you're not really familiar and you're just typing in whatever you're looking for, CNET is one of the top ones that comes up. So a lot of people would be using it anyways if they don't know any better.
No, that's very true. CNET and download.com and 2Cows and all of those ones, they bundle crapware all over the place.
Absolutely.
So But yeah, just be vigilant, folks. That's what we're, that's the message we're trying to send to you. All right, Pete, you can handle the next one.
Emulator now runs x86 apps on all Raspberry Pi models. That's pretty cool. LTEC's faster Exagear desktop software version now supports ARM v6 in addition to ARM v7, letting users run x86 apps on all models of the Raspberry Pi. Woohoo! The key to the Pi 2 enhancements was that the software, which was previously optimized for Ubuntu, or Ubuntu, as Richard likes to say, now fully supports Debian, including the Debian-based Raspbian. The host system can now Ubuntu 12.04 or higher, Debian 7 or Raspbian. The new release has also added guest images for Ubuntu 12.04, Ubuntu 14.04, and Debian 7. In addition to supporting the Raspberry Pi, I'm holding my hands up in the air like I just don't care. The software runs on Linux-based platforms, including Odroid. I'm not familiar with Odroid. QBoards, CUBox, Utilite, Jetson, TK1. Wow, there's a bunch of them, eh? OneBoard and Banana Pi. Banana Pi, I never heard of that one either. Among others, Exagear Desktop can also run on an ARM-based Chromebook. Windows programs is possible by also installing the Wine emulator. Good old Wine. So this was obtained from Linux Gizmos. You can check that out at linuxgizmos.com. The article is called Emulator Now Runs x86 Apps on All Raspberry Pi Models. And the link will be in the show notes. Comments?
Hang on, getting through some jerky. Okay. One thing about the Raspberry Pi and similar platforms that people may not realize is the reason they run things like Debian and Ubuntu is because there are a few of the distributions out there that are actually for the ARM chipset. Most people probably think that the Raspberry Pi might be based on an Intel chipset and will just run everything out of the box, but it won't. It's based on ARM, and therefore that's why this emulator is handy, because it allows you to run what more people would consider standard software or standard chipset software on the ARM processor. So that's very handy. This looks very cool, especially for the Raspberry Pi 2. Running an emulator on top of the original Pi doesn't sound like a good option for running software, but on top of the quad core and higher spec options of the Pi 2, seems like this would be truly handy. But of course, Raspbian, it's what I run on my Pi, and it's a great option. So if you just want to run something that's compiled natively for ARM, you can't really go wrong with that.
What's Banana Pi?
I don't know what the Banana Pi is. I'd never heard of that before.
I mean, I know what a Banana Pi is. They're very yummy.
Well, yeah.
Banana cream pie. Oh, my God. I'm making myself hungry. Beef jerky. Banana cream pie. Oh, look.
That sounds like a meal to me.
What comes up? Banana cream pie recipe from food.com. Screw you.
Yeah, see, that's the bad thing in our house, because Russ only eats apple pie. And that is one apple pie I don't
it's
like.
It's all American. Banana pie, a $57 Raspberry Pi clone with a faster CPU. Faster CPU, more memory. There's no shortage of single-board low-power computers on the market these days, but several years after launch of the Raspberry Pi, it's still probably the most popular. While the Raspberry Pi features 700 megahertz single-core Broadcom processor and ARM2 processor, the Banana Pi has a 1 gigahertz all-winter A20 dual-core ARM Cortex A7 processor. Ooh. The Banana Pi has 1 gig of RAM for the 512 megs of the Raspberry Pi. The Banana Pi features an SD card slot, HDMI and composite video jacks, 3.5 millimeter audio jack, and built-in microphone. Gigabit Ethernet, 2 USB 2.0 port, micro USB port for power, and IR receiver. And IR and Raspberry Pi compatible headers, including a 26-pin header, camera connector, and more. Wow. Hey, this is pretty cool.
It is pretty cool, although I believe the Raspberry Pi 2B that has just come out is actually faster, has more processor, and more USB slots than the Banana Pi, because it's based on the original Raspberry Pi, whereas the 2B is more robust even than this. So forget the Banana Pi, just get the Pi 2B. The Raspberry Pi 2B.
Well, this article dates back to the 21st of April, so it's a couple of months old.
Yeah, the 2B has a 900 meg quad-core ARM Cortex A7 CPU, 1 gig of RAM, 4 USB, 40 GPIO pins, full HDMI port, Ethernet, 3.5 millimeter audio jack and composite video, camera interface, display interface, micro SD card slot, and a video core IV 3D graphics core.
There's no shortage of single board, you know, computers out there. Just pick the one that works for you.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the nice thing. There's so many choices, you know, less expensive, more expensive, different features. There's just something for everyone. It's awesome. And for those who don't understand technology, permits me to keep myself employed. Thank you to those people.
How Pete makes his living, yes.
Yep.
All right. So moving on and skipping one story. The story we're going to skip will be in the show notes, so you can check that out. But we're going to move on to the private Linux cloud server for $89, which also streams media. An $89 peer-to-peer Breeze private file server on Kickstarter features four USB 3 ports, a gig Ethernet port, 256-bit AES encryption, mobile support, and media streaming. The Dutch startup Breeze, which is Bravo Romeo Echo Alpha, Sierra Echo, is more than halfway to the goal on their Kickstarter of $90,000 to fund this private file server. The packages are available through June 16th, starting at $89 or $119 for the functionally identical Black Thunder edition. Yeah, there you go. Both of which ship in February of 2016. Internally identical anodized aluminum Onyx edition goes for $199. But ships earlier in December of this year. And that, again, is from linuxgizmos.com. This is kind of interesting. And what was interesting is when I looked at that article, it also mentioned some other media servers that are actually already in production or are about to be in production based on other Kickstarter projects. Some of them are pretty cool. This particular one that we're talking about, the Breeze, actually doesn't have any built-in storage. You have to attach storage to it via USB or whatever. Some of the other ones that were mentioned in the article and are linked to from there actually have their own built-in storage, some of them a terabyte or more of built-in storage and doing like encrypted media distribution and stuff like that. So if you're into these little self-contained streaming media units, check out the article, which the link will be in the show notes at linuxgizmos.com is where it's from, and it'll be in our show notes if you're looking into just file serving and hosting in your local LAN environment and being able to stream video to your home devices and wirelessly and whatnot. Some of these are pretty neat. So moving on from our open source discussion into Linux in the Ham Shack, this is where our show is a little light this week, but we do have a couple of topics. The first one is one I found a little while ago while I was looking around for topics to talk about tonight, and it's a YouTube video on how to find ham radio software for Linux, Mint, and Ubuntu. It's a short video. I think it's only about 17 minutes long, maybe a little less than that, so it's a quick watch.
9 minutes and 18.
Oh, it's less than 10 minutes. Okay, yeah. So just gives you a good overview and a step-by-step walkthrough of how to go into the software manager and specifically find ham radio software if you happen to be using a Debian, Linux Mint, or Ubuntu-based distribution that has the software center and gives you access to finding software using that method. And it actually goes into a little bit of the theory behind software centers and software management, as well as actually doing the searching for software specifically for ham radio, which is kind of handy, and all encapsulated in a video less than 10 minutes long. If this is something you've been wondering about, or you know, if you're really new to the show and you're just kind of catching up and trying to figure out how the best way is for you to find software for your computer if you're not using a ham radio specific distribution like Shackbox or, you know, Andy's Ham Radio Linux or something like that, this might be a good resource for you to check out. I actually watched the first few minutes of it, and I thought it would be a great resource for beginners getting into using Linux for ham radio. It's a link to it will be in the show notes, as always. I would read it to you, but it's one of those crazy YouTube URLs, which I'm not going to bother with. All right, what was the thing we were supposed to talk about during this segment? The
Debian versus Linux Mint.
Debian, that's right. the question from Petro earlier in the chat room was, what's the difference between Debian and Linux Mint Debian? Back early on, there was a fairly sizable difference because Linux Mint Debian was based on Debian. In other words, you had access to all of the Debian repositories, but then all of the software that made up the Mate desktop and all of the visual enhancements that were created by the Linux Mint team were added on as a repository on top of Debian and then presented as Linux Mint Debian. So you had all of the prettified versions of the Mate desktop and all of the software that was written by Linux Mint packaged with the standard Debian repositories at the same time. So you had basically an amalgam of those two distributions. Now, however, Mate, since it's sort of been released separately by the Linux Mint team, is actually included in the Jesse, or 8.0 or 8.1.0, as it's recently been released, of Debian. So you can actually get Mate and the visual enhancements of Linux Mint on Debian just by installing Debian now. So you don't have to use Linux Mint Debian anymore, and I would probably recommend that you don't do that. If you just want the visual enhancements of the Mate desktop, just install the 8.1 version of Debian. If you're actually looking for their enhancements on top of the Ubuntu platform, that is the core of what Linux Mint was based on and is still based on. So Linux Mint, as it's going forward, is still based on Ubuntu. And if you want all of the features of Ubuntu and the Linux Mint enhancements, download Linux Mint. If you just want what Mate brings to the table on top of Debian, just download Debian, because the latest installers of Debian allow you to install all kinds of desktop environments, including XFCE, LXDE, KDE, GNOME 3, Mate, and so on and so forth. And you only need to use stock Debian in order to do that. So if that's the way you want to go, I would recommend just using Debian. If you want the features of Ubuntu, including PPA support, extended driver support, support for non-free software beyond the scope of the repositories of what Debian provides, then use Linux Mint. Both are good options, and both are fully functional. It just depends on which philosophy you want to go with. But that, to me, is what I believe the difference is, the narrowing difference between Linux Mint Debian and vanilla Debian, if you want to call it that. They're getting much closer together, and I would recommend just using Debian at this point. There's a comment in the chat room from V3SRE who says, running Solidex, S-O-L-Y-D-X, on the machine I'm typing on, it's what used to be Linux Mint Debian Edition with XFCE desktop. So if you like XFCE on top of your LMDE, you can just run Solidex. And if you really like acronyms, then you should do that.
Okay.
All right. Well, seeing no more topics being presented in the chat room, I believe we are ready to move on to our music segment for tonight. Well, I will say that this music selection came to me about 5 minutes before the show, and I have actually not listened to the entire song. So this could be interesting. It's a little different than the music we normally play here. It's kind of rock, pop, electronica kind of thing. It's not really dubstep, but it's along those lines. But what I heard of the first minute or so of the song, actually, I liked a whole lot. So we're going to play it.
Yeah, you got to be careful. Sometimes that can go horribly wrong. I always skip through the whole thing, even though I don't listen to it. But sometimes it starts off awesome, and then it ends really horribly.
Right. And this song is a little over five.
Or vice versa.
That's true. This song is a little over 5 minutes long, so it could go straight to hell after a minute and a half. I don't know. We're going to find out together. It's a song called War Inside by Dilo from the album Screwed, which, I don't know, that gives me hope. Courtesy of Jamenda.
Or it could go very, very wrong.
That's right. Either Screwed is very clever or we're all just screwed. Anyway, this was released several years ago, actually, in July of 2007. Hopefully the rest of you will enjoy it, and we're, like I say, all going to find out together. We'll be back in about 5 minutes to see if we really liked it or not. We'll be right back. Okay, was it good? I didn't hear any of it.
Because you're fixing cocktails.
Yeah, I was making drinks.
Alrighty then. No, that was all right. It was. It actually kind of reminded me of Devo.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, well, I didn't hear it other than the bit I heard at the beginning, so...
Yeah, well, there were lyrics, so, but they were good.
Well, Bill in the chat room says it was pretty good, so there, that's three resounding maybes.
See, it wouldn't have been my choice, but yeah, I enjoyed it. It was all right.
All right, good deal. Well, I'm glad it was, you know, at least moderately okay, and I'll enjoy listening to the rest of it at some point, I'm sure, probably when I re-listen to this episode. So we have some feedback that I need to get to and some announcements. Well, let me start with the announcements real quick. Daryl KI4LLA will be our ambassador at the Southeast Linux Fest. If you get a chance to go there, you should do that. And at the Roanoke Ham Fest. So if you happen to be in the Roanoke area, that's in Virginia, for those people who don't know, we will also have Daryl as our ambassador there. So very cool. Thank you, Daryl, for taking on that responsibility and for representing Linux in the Ham Shack at a Ham Fest and a Linux Fest. That's very cool. Let's see what else we have in the world of announcements. Oh, yes, there is this. The Ohio Linux Fest is looking for presentations. The call for participation is open, and the deadline for submissions is the 17th of July, so you do have some time. But if you want to be a presenter at the Ohio Linux Fest, you can do that. And that, of course, is in Columbus, Ohio. The Ohio Linux Fest has actually been going since 2003. This is actually the 13th year for the Ohio Linux Fest. That's pretty cool.
Lucky number 13.
Yep, excellent. Lucky number 13. And I have actually presented at Ohio Linux Fest. So you can present too if you want to. Just have to submit that presentation by the 17th for consideration. And then, you know, go ahead and attend Ohio Linux Fest, even if you don't get to speak, because it's a very cool conference.
You have also presented itself.
I did present itself as well. I have been a presenter back when we could actually go to all these conferences.
Yeah, for those that aren't going to make it to self but kind of want to check everything out, they're offering a front porch mode this year, which is featuring live streaming coverage and interviews by Jupiter Broadcasting.
Oh, Jupiter Broadcasting, those idiots.
Yeah, links and update to presentations as they go live on YouTube.
That'll get me in good with them.
Hashtag so. Feed and hilarious hashtag collision, IRC, and boss buttons. The links will go up a few days before the event, so stay tuned to our social media. Or subscribe to our low traffic announcement mailing list, which is on their website.
Yeah, so. And I would like to state at this point that I do not believe the Jupiter Broadcasting folks are idiots. I actually do listen to their shows, particularly Linux Action Show. Yeah, I actually do listen to that or watch that one. My understanding is that they're actually going to be at Self, and that Daryl was going to actually try and go over there and, you know, kind of talk up Linux in the Ham Shack while he was there. We'll see how that works out. I don't get a chance to watch video podcasts a lot, and the Linux Action Show is actually a video podcast. They do release an audio version of it.
So they record video and audio and then release either or kind of thing?
Yeah, they record both and release both. So
Are they recording a show that's video and audio, and then you could choose to just listen to the MP3 or the AUG, or like is it the same show?
No, it's the like same show.
In time. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's the same show, so you do lose a little bit if you're listening to the audio version.
Just the audio, yeah, okay.
Yeah. They also have their app out on various platforms like the Roku, so if you have a Roku or other streaming media device, you can get to Jupiter Broadcasting and all of their programs via those methods as well. We also have other feedback, and we have some feedback here via Google Plus from Petro, who is in the chat room tonight. He says, Russ, you are clearly a full-on Debian guy. That's quite true. He says, I've been using Fedora myself for more than 2 years. Of all the distros out there, why do you pick Debian? Why not Fedora or Ubuntu or SUSE? Just curious. By the way, if you're ever in Montreal, pancakes on me. I'm there. Anyway, there actually is a question in this post, and that's why did I pick Debian as opposed to Fedora or Ubuntu or SUSE? I think it's largely a case of what you start with. I think that happens to most folks, is that what you start with is what you get familiar with, and then that's what you gravitate towards over time. But honestly, as time has gone on, I have tried flavors of Linux of every kind. I've tried Arch, I have tried Slackware, I've tried Fedora, I've tried Red Hat, I've tried SUSE. I've tried a million variations of all of them, and what it comes down to is, no matter how many of them I try, it just seems like Debian is always the most stable, always has access to the broadest array of software, and seems to work on any machine I put it on, no matter what. Whether it's high performance, low performance, proprietary hardware, open hardware, it doesn't seem to matter. Everything I've ever tried, Debian just seems to work best on. I have much easier access to all of the software and the software repositories on Debian than any of the other software. Now, I know that most of those repositories are available in distributions like Ubuntu, but Ubuntu is run and managed and developed by Canonical, and they have some bizarre ideas of what software and what Linux should look like. So that's why I haven't been real interested in the direction that Ubuntu has gone. I ran and still do run versions of Red Hat, both Scientific Linux and Fedora, and also CentOS. I do that in production environments because sometimes production software or commercial software is only released and packaged for distributions based on RPMs, like Red Hat, CentOS, and Scientific. And so for those, I will happily run those versions of Linux. But what I feel most comfortable with and what is most stable and works on the most hardware for me has always been, and presumably always will be, Debian. And that's why I am a hardcore Debian user. So, and I know that other people will probably feel the same way about Red Hat, or feel the same way about Fedora or Arch or Slackware, or any number of other distributions out there. But yes, I am a Debian head from the very beginning, and presumably always will be.
I started with Ubuntu. This was the first thing that I was introduced to. And I really wasn't that impressed with it. I found it looked really clunky. I really can't remember which version, but say about 6 years ago. And I thought it looked clunky and chunky and just wasn't, you know, as user-friendly as I like. Then I was introduced to Mint, and I was sold on Mint, and that's what I recommend. And I've tried different things, different flavors, back and forth, and I find Mint is very user-friendly, so I usually recommend it. And we've said this on the show plenty of times. I usually recommend it to most people that I introduce Mint to, especially for those people coming from Mac and Windows who aren't really familiar with Linux, because it's just very easy and very user-friendly, and the environment is familiar and very intuitive. You know, I've tried Harv's Ham Shack Hacks, and I've tried Crunch Bang. I'm a really big fan of Crunch Bang, but I kind of keep coming back to Mint a little bit out of laziness, because it's just easy and it works.
Well, let's move on. We got a bunch of feedback here from Johnny, N4JEK, November 4, Juliet Echo Kilo. He says, thanks, Russ. I appreciate you taking the time to answer my question about loggers. He says, I guess until I actually see a contest logger in action, some of what you said may make more sense to me. You see, I don't have or own a copy of Windows, so I can't try the Windows loggers to see what they have. Anyway, I'm sure you will share once you find a good contest logger. I think we've already shared that YFK test and Tusnok are both very good contest loggers. They don't have all of the features like the N3MM and some of the other Windows contest loggers, but they are very, very good, and I would recommend them. YFK test for its simplicity and Tusnok for its sheer ridiculous number of features. He also says, for those that are interested in how to add HamQTH search bar to Mozilla, you can check out this link. It's at lifehacker.com, and of course that link will be in the show notes. He's got a bit of code. You can actually create a Firefox plugin or a Chrome plugin that will allow you to have a search bar in your browser for doing HamQTH lookups without actually having to go to the website. And it's basically just some simple XML code that you have to cut and paste. Very simple. And of course, the lifehacker.com link will show you all you need to know to do that. So you can check out the comments on the article for the episode release 147 over on Linux in the Ham Shack and see all of the code posted there. And of course, in the show notes will be the link to the actual article on how to do that. Thanks again to Johnny and for J.E.K. for your feedback on the show. We really appreciate it. We also got a bit of feedback via Google Plus from Ben Schramm. He's an Aussie who's actually been on the show. And he said, "Hi, Russ and Cheryl." He didn't address Pete, but I'm gonna stick that in there anyway. "I hope you're both doing well. It's been a while since I was last in contact. I have just listened to the LHS episode number 145, and you mentioned that you had purchased and tried out an RTL SDR, which indeed I have. I too have tried to get web radio. I managed to compile it, install it, and get it to run, but accessing the webpage portal on the host or another client wouldn't load the UI controls. I could hear background noise, but controls or display was not functioning at all. However, I have had massive success with the following software and setups. Other cool radio Linuxy stuff I have played with and recommend are Direwolf for Linux to encode and decode APRS using any radio's audio output to a system sound card, I2C, serial, etc., which you can find that at home.comcast.net/WB2OSZ, Whiskey Bravo 2, Oscar Sierra Zulu, /site. And he had great success in using a Baofeng UV5R Plus connecting through an Easy Digi by KF5INZ, Kilo Fox 5, India November Zulu. Then the mic and speaker output to a USB sound card on a Raspberry Pi B. Thanks for writing about that. And any information that's included in this about APRS and RTL SDR, I will make sure that gets posted in the show notes so everyone has access to. And thanks for the feedback, Ben. It has been a while since we've talked to you, but it's good to hear from you, my friend. That is actually all of the feedback that I have. So let's go ahead and move on from our announcements and feedbacks, and we'll send it over to Cheryl for Cheryl's Recipe Corner.
Woo-hoo! From raspberry pie to
lemonade pie.
Lemonade pie.
Yeah.
Which is better than banana pie.
Whatever. I don't know. Banana pie is pretty damn good.
Yeah, banana pie is really good. Yeah. So anyway, the recipe that I picked this week is something that I tend to fall back on in the summer because the heat and the humidity in Missouri can be just outrageous. This is something super quick to do. It takes 5 minutes to whip it up. No baking required. The recipe that I actually posted is for a lemonade pie, which uses lemonade, frozen lemonade concentrate, sweetened condensed milk, frozen whip topping, which...
Just call it Cool Whip.
Cool Whip, yeah. And a graham cracker pie crust, which you can make your own or do pre-made. I always buy it off the shelf. You just thaw your concentrate and mix everything together. And if you don't want lemonade, you can do pink lemonade. You can use frozen limeade. You can buy orange juice. You can buy grape juice. As long as it's frozen, that's all you need. Yeah.
And it says it yields 6 to 8 servings or 1.
Anyway, social media roundup. Go for it.
All right. In the social media roundup, donations and subscriptions department, we have Bill Arcand for monthly, Scott Pettigrew for monthly, Steve Conklin for monthly, Jeremy Hall for monthly, and Edward Donnelly for yearly. And he is a new person.
Yay.
We have Doug Parsons and Washy 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 on Facebook.
Washy Washy Washy.
Yep. Google Plus is Sergio Duran, Jim KDE, and Gisnubala. I'm massacring names here. On Twitter is KJ0JK.
In the chat room as we speak.
Yes. VK4DAA, Sergio E. Duran 1, R-O-A-L-U-G, which is probably Roanoke Lug, I'm going to...
R-O-A Lug, for sure.
Yeah. And David Rowe...
Like a Linux user group? Sorry.
Maybe, yeah.
Yes, probably.
David Wawronka. And on YouTube, we had WA5SWT. Nobody joined the mailing list. Nobody bought anything. So,
which brings me back to the fact that there were some major problems with the website I noticed a few days ago, which have subsequently been fixed, particularly the right column ad, the Google Sense ad that's supposed to be on the right column of the website. Probably rendered properly for some people, but didn't render properly for other people. But that should be fixed now. Anyway, if you want to check out the website, there's all of that. But anyway, unless we've got anything else to talk about, or if there's any discussion in the chat room that needs to be brought into the show, I'm probably getting ready to push some buttons and get us on out of here at long last.
Roa Lug is actually the Roanoke Linux user group. So.
All right, sounds good. There you go. Bill says, we're on to booze now. Well, sorry, Bill, you're a little late. I've been on to booze for the last 2.5 hours. So.
I've been on the booze since episode one.
I've been boozing it up since I was 18. I mean, before. 21.
Wow, you started so late.
Yeah. So with that, I'm going to push some buttons, and I guess we're going to get on out of here. So thanks, everybody, for listening. And outro starts now. Oh, look, there it is. How about that? Let's listen to the music for a second. All right, anybody who's listening to this at this point, if you want to find out about the show, the best place is at our website, lhspodcast.info. And like Daryl did, you can become an LHS ambassador and represent us at a local HamFest or LinuxCon near you. For more information, just check out the website, check out the schedule of events on there, or email us at ambassadors@lhspodcast.info. You can also email us at info@lhspodcast.info if you want to leave us a comment, or you can leave a comment via voicemail at 1-909-LHS-SHOW. That's 1-909-547-7469. You can chat with other listeners of the show on our IRC channel. That's #LHS Podcast. That's the #LHS Podcast over on the Freenode network. You can subscribe to our mailing list. It's a low volume mailing list, and we send out important information about the show and announcements about various things, upcoming events, and upcoming contests, which you might want to be a part of. Show merchandise from our show can be purchased at cafepress.com/LHS podcast and printfection.com/LHS podcast. And some of those purchases actually help out the show. You can also help out the show by clicking on the sponsored ads in the right-hand column of the homepage. We broadcast every other Monday night at 8 o'clock Central Time. That's 0200 Zulu early Tuesday mornings. The recording schedule and countdown timer are on the website, as is all the information you ever want to know about the show, lhspodcast.info. Thank you to all of our listeners, live, quasi-live, past, present, and future. We appreciate each and every one of you and hope to hear from you in feedback or in the chat room during our live broadcasts. And that's about it for us. So for Cheryl, who's sitting across from me, for Pete, VE2XPL up in Montreal, and for me, Russ, K5TUX, broadcasting live from Studio 3D in Southwest Missouri. Thank you for listening to episode number 148 of Linux in the Ham Shack. We'll catch you all in actually 1 week's time this time. And hope to hear from you all soon. Thanks for listening. Catch you later. Bye-bye.
See you next week.
Bye.
You don't have to be mentally deficient to do this job, but it sure helps.